session number 9552, reel 4.
Mr. Basil Farrer, Reel 4. Could you tell me when you first heard the news of war, or the approach of war, Mr. Farrer?
Quite honestly, I don't think I could. It must have been very near the date of the 4th. As a very, very young soldier, as I think I've already mentioned, then in 1914, I was still only 16 years of age. I didn't read newspapers, therefore I wasn't au fait with the general news. I think we had heard vaguely of the assassination of this Archduke in Austria, or wherever it was, in Bosnia. We'd heard of it, and it's just one of those things, because the war in the Balkans had been going on for years at that period. And so it was of no particular interest to us. And I don't think myself, I honestly don't think we realised until quite, might have been, within a week of it breaking out, we didn't realise it. And I really think it was not until, I think, no, the 4th of August, the Battle of Mons was fought on the 23rd, 21 from that is the 2nd, therefore, it must have been a Tuesday, the 4th of August. Must have been a Tuesday. And I remember that weekend, and not until that week. Immediately, we were confined to barracks. We were confined to barracks. That is to say, I was at the...
For that weekend?
That weekend.
The weekend immediately before?
Yes, the weekend before it actually broke out. Because I think the 4th must have been a Tuesday. I think it was a Tuesday. So we were confined to barracks either the Saturday, Sunday, and onwards. Now, prior to the war breaking out, even prior to this, the assassination at Sarajevo, we did have, I remember, we had it over our bed, a little, I almost think it was a little pink card. Anyhow, that's immaterial, the colour. We had a card of our mobilisation station. Now, of course, an infantry regiment would mobilise instantly. All the lot would move to a certain point. Now, the Green Howards, they were stationed in the Channel Islands, but they'd join the 7th Division, 21st Brigade, 7th Division, wherever that mobilised. I had an idea it was from Ireland. Anyhow, that's immaterial. So, whereas RAMC individuals could be posted to different units. And I remember I had a card on mobilisation, the station I was to report at, and it was Colchester. So we were confined to barracks that weekend, and on the Monday we handed in our kit, that is the kit that we wouldn't need on our ceremonials, ceremonial dress, helmet and all that kind of thing, and our personal belongings, which we didn't want to leave behind, and just to move off in I've forgotten the correct expression, but what with the war equipment.
What was it you retained then to take overseas? What did you take?
Well, uniform, clothes you had on, change of linen, ground sheet, greatcoat, and forage cap. Now, in addition to that, you would normally, a soldier, had fatigue, stuff as I've told you. He'd also a ceremonial dress for walking out, walking out dress, that was according to the army he was in. He'd be either in reds or blue or whatever it was. The RAMC was a dark blue with various facings. And I forgot the. A red facing. Facings are the cuffs and the collar, you know. All that we'd handed in was our personal property. As on enlistment, you're issued with an entire uniform and everything required by the soldier. And you have an annual allowance for replacements because of the frequent kit inspections that an officer might say, order a replacement, which was at your expense. Therefore, everything was your personal property except your helmet and I think your greatcoat. I think it was a greatcoat, but your helmet, which that wasn't your personal property. But I remember handing in Woolwich all my personal property and including a number of drawings, because you've seen in here I've got one or two pictures that I've painted myself, but even in those days I did a bit of sketching, and over my bed I had quite a number of paintings and drawings of my own which all went in, and various personal property. And normally, had I thought of it after the war, I could have gone to Woolwich and claimed that because it's my personal property, but I never thought. And so what became of it, one was, I remember, a calf stick, which anyhow, that was that. And on the Monday, I think it was, we marched down to Woolwich. I remember us going under the Blackwall Tunnel, I think the Blackwall Tunnel's at Woolwich, catching the train on the other side, arriving in London. I've forgotten the station, but crowds just didn't take much notice of us. Then took a train to Colchester and reported at Colchester, which was a big, fairly big military garrison.
How did you feel about going off to war?
Oh, excited. Everybody was really... I mean, there was no question of... everybody was excited. In fact, at Colchester, they didn't send... the age, I think you had to be 19. Although it is a fact, certain regiments took out their bugler boys. But I remember at Colchester, one or two boys in the barracks, envying me, they were there, the proper age, they were bugler boys. And I was only 16, but my army age was 19 and a half. And I was going straight out. And
why were people so keen? What was it that made them excited and keen? Can you remember?
Well, this was before Kitchener's appeal. This was... I'm not saying about the civilian population. I don't know what the reaction of the civilian population... We didn't concern ourselves very much with that. But as far as the soldier was concerned, it was our job, for which we were trained to do, and some who had done the South African War knew what war was about, but certainly didn't know what a continental war was. They might have felt different to younger lads who... They express it now on the streets. If those so-called delinquents on the streets were in the army, that youthful exertion, we were going out to fight. We didn't... And lots of them didn't care whether it was the French or the Germans. We were soldiers, trained soldiers. We'd been instilled... That was it, your regimental military history. And you knew your military history. And the glory of it, you didn't know the carnage until you met it. So at the beginning, we were really enthusiastic. And we thought ourselves very superior, too. The British soldier did think him superior to any continental soldier. He might or might not have been. But nevertheless, certain compliments paid by the German generals, von Kluck in particular, and the fellow who inspired whose saying inspired that BBC programme, those exceptional soldiers, they had a fine opinion of the British soldier. The Germans were automatic. They couldn't take... Whereas we were trained as soldiers, well, from the English point of view. And we thought ourselves superior. And so there was a great enthusiasm.
What did you think the war would be like?
With no idea. Well, when I say we, I'm speaking personally. As a young man, we didn't discuss it. In any event, I'd been so young, I didn't have very many friends. Well, we were all comrades, but I had no particular friend with... Because I was so young, the others were all older than me, and more. They would be piled up with some... But I don't remember having a particular pal... So although I was a comrade and all that and mixed with everybody, and I don't recollect having a special pal.
And how many of your comrades from Woolwich were assigned to the same unit?
Honestly, I do not remember.
But a few of them, from the sound of it.
Yes. And yeah, when I got to college...
The other thing is, were you expecting a long war? Or did you think about it be over by Christmas or any of these other things?
I'm speaking for myself entirely. I had no idea what I was going into, no idea how long it would be. All I knew that we were going to war.
What unit were you posted to when you got to Colchester?
Well, from Colchester, I was in the general barracks, and then when I did move out, I found, over to France, that is, we sailed from Southampton.
So you weren't assigned before you'd been to a unit before you'd gone to France?
Yes. The assignment, that's why I reported to Colchester, probably, because when I got to France, I found that... The unit, the RAMC unit, was an hospital, whether it was not a base hospital, but an hospital, which eventually I found myself, as I say...
You didn't know this at the time in Colchester, though, what unit you were being assigned to? You didn't know its name?
No.
But when you got to Colchester, what was the situation? What was going on at Colchester?
Well, I think we were all confined to barracks. The only time I remember going out of barracks, we were only there a few days, but the days was nearly a week because we sort of. I remember vaguely thinking, "Oh my God, we'll get out there before it gets finished." We thought it was going to be a quick war. That is so. Now looking back, we wanted to get out there before it's finished, you know. But the only time I remember going out, whether it was the day I entrained or not, out of the barrack area, because I think Colchester must have been very much like Woolwich with the barrack area. That I don't know. I think it must have been, because they were all barracks. But I remember going down to the station with the party I was going over to France with, and there were, whether there were artillery or ASC remount, but there was loading horses into wagons, because everything was horse transport then. And might have been artillery, it might have been ASC. And yeah, I was in the sidings there, and I remember a funny incident. An ASC chap, he had hold of the reins, or the rein, of about half a dozen horses. He said, he handed it to me, he got all this, all me this, John, he wanted to do something, and left me with six horses. I'd never, all of a sudden the horses had them all around me. I was scared stiff, because there were remounts kicking out, and especially they were a bit excited, so many horses being in load. That's the only time I've ever had anything to do, in my life, I've had anything to do with horses. I do remember that in the railway siding at Colchester. Anyhow, the fellow came back and relieved me. And we too, I think it might have been that day, entrained.
At Colchester, did you get any impression of the efficiency of the mobilisation arrangements? Did it seem to you that everything was progressing smoothly and everyone had a purpose in what they were doing? Or was there an element of chaos or...
Well, there wasn't an element, everything went, seemed to be normal, as far as I can recollect. And then again, in that order, everything really was smooth. We were regimental, we were drilled. And the ordinary soldier, we didn't know what was happening, if you understand what I mean. We didn't know whether it was smooth or chaos. But as far as just things were going on normally, we were going on in barracks. We'd appear in orders to appear at parade, and we'd parade, march down to the station, and that was that. There was nothing chaotic, just a general air of excitement, but that's all, from my recollection. And anticipation, and also a little bit of those who were leaving behind considered us as lucky beggars, but didn't say beggars, they said the same word very much like it, you know. So that was that. And we marched down, we entrained down to Southampton, marched out of the train, into the docks, boarded a vessel.
Did you get any sort of a send-off from anybody, or the civilians locally, or anything? As you,
there may have been, but I... at the British Army, in later times, there might have been a bit of cheering, I don't remember. In later times, battalions... well, of course, battalions, some battalions were marched down with the band, and there would be cheered, obviously a band would attract. But I'm merely supposing that. I have no recollection of it. There may have been crowds in the street. There may have been. But really, I honestly, I have no recollection of people going through cheering crowds.
Were you given any special kit before you went to France at all? Any?
Well, yes. The only special kit I remember was we were issued, as far as the RMC were concerned, we were issued with... I forgot what they call it. A little pack which you placed inside your tunic. There's a little pocket with a bandage. A first aid kit. There's a bandage and a pin, a safety pin, and a tube of iodine. That's all you had to put on a wound. Bandage it up and pin it. That was inside. I don't remember the... I've heard of emergency rations. I know that in the Second World War I landed with emergency rations, but I don't. Emergency rations, I think, I've forgotten when they were issued. Emergency rations was a type of ration where you didn't have to touch until ordered, unless ordered by an officer. If you did it, it became a crime. A crime, incidentally, in the army is really a misdemeanor. I mean, being slovenly. You're brought up before your company officer, and it's on your crime sheet. That's a crime in the army. A crime. A misdemeanor.
Were you given any advice or lectures or notes or anything to tell you how to behave in France and what to do?
Yes. There was a leaflet issued by Kitchener. Oh, we were issued with it. There's one thing. Now, I will go back. Before, during peacetime, a soldier had what he called a small book. That was a book in which his whole history in the army was written. When he joined, his promotions, all that. When war broke out, we had to hand in our small books, and we were issued with our pay books. Every book in the army is numbered. I forgot what the number of the small book was, but the army pay book was AB64. Army Book 64, and we were issued with a leaflet which Kitchener had printed to be placed in this AB64 pay book, and it was advice from Kitchener to remember we were soldiers. I don't know the exact wording, obviously, now I can only vague, but reminding us that we were British soldiers. And how to act. We were also ambassadors, representing our country. But I must say that in part, it read very much. Now, this is with hindsight. I didn't think so at the time. I took no notice. I was too young to bother. I just read it, and that was all. I don't know what the general opinion of the troops would be, but it would be a bit ribald, really, on the whole, I think. Because in part it read very much like a parson's advice to a party of parishioners going off on a weekend binge to Paris. That I'm referring to is advice of the temptations of wine and women. Now, the ordinary soldier had neither the means or the facilities to indulge in such fantasies, not where he was going. The fighting soldier especially didn't expect to fight wine and women there. That could refer to base wallers, and as Kitchener, who was Sidar of Egypt and used to that kind of thing in Egypt, we were certainly not going to Egypt, and we weren't going to Paris. The soldier was going out to fight, not to any town, and there was not much hope of the temptations of women and wine in any event. He didn't. He hadn't that much means. All the wine was cheap. And that was that. Now, he could have been more inspiring, too, to the troops going out. Had he taken advantage of a certain thing. I believe, for instance, that Churchill was very averse to sending out our young, enthusiastic and trained territorials. He was very averse to that. There was half a dozen or so London territorials, London Scottish Artist Rifles, Queen's Westminster Rifles that went qualified as all contemptibles. But it was Kitchener was suspicious of the territorials. In fact, that was the former new army, a good idea. He did form a million men, but it took time. But we had territorials there, which he could have used. He was averse to them for this reason. He assimilated them to the French territorial that he had seen whilst he was attached to the French HQ during the Franco-Prussian War of 1870. He was the British observer with the French during that war, and he'd seen the French territorials. Now, the French territorial is what you might say a superannuated soldier, an old soldier who was used mainly for guard duties, guarding bridges, guarding depots and things like that. They were all men, old soldiers. And Kitchener had assimilated the French territorial with the English territorial with the French. That was his aversion.
What did you think of the English territorials? Had you come across them?
Yes, but we, of course, I wouldn't say we ridiculed them, but we did refer them to the Saturday Night Soldiers. We thought, you know, the amateurs and below our standard, we thought of some superiors as far as soldiers are concerned. They might have been, as far as socially speaking, they might have been superior, because in the yeomanry they had to supply their own horses, and I think some had to supply their own uniforms. And in some territorial regiment, they had to be agreed by the colonel before they could join. So they were a selective crew. They were enthusiastic. But we as professionals thought, as soldiers thought ourselves, superior, naturally. Anyhow...
What was the voyage like across...
The voyage across... Before I mention that, I'll finish about Kitchener. Whilst he was attached to the French during the 70 War, he could. I'm now going back to this leaflet. The leaflet would have been more inspiring, more appropriate to troops going to battle, had he read some of Napoleon's proclamation to his troops before entering battle, particularly the one at Austerlitz, where it says, well, it wasn't anything like that. Anyhow, you were saying?
What was the actual journey across?
The journey
channel,
across. It was fairly smooth. The ship was packed with all arms, all different. Not Star MC, but all arms on the ship. I forgot what type it was. It wasn't a very big one. And the funny thing is, I did read once. Of course, we went from Southampton. We went to Boulogne. Some went to Havre and some to Rouen, but we went to Boulogne. We embarked on Friday the 14th. Of August. And I do remember, I think I've read that the British fleet, although guardianers, were not visible. Now that is wrong. I distinctly remember they were very visible to us, because we passed battleships, and as we passed them we cheered and they cheered back. So we did pass a couple of battleships on going through the channel, and we arrived at Boulogne in the evening. Being in the evening, we didn't disembark. Stayed on board, and the next morning we disembarked. But before disembarking, right alongside our vessel, there was a French soldier dressed in the French uniform. Well, the French uniform wasn't khaki like ours. He got a kepi, what they call the kepi is a French thing, sort of red top and visor at the front. A capote is French for a military greatcoat, turned back at the bottom, and red trousers, got a cigarette in his mouth, his rifle slung over his shoulder, and his hands in his pockets. Well, we'd never seen anything like it in all our lives. On guard like that. It was, really, it's beyond description, it was laughable. But it did remind me, I think at the time, there was a play in London, or thereabouts, called The Chocolate Soldier. And I remember seeing a theatrical bill post, and it was identical to this. That was the French territorial, you see, to which Kitchener compared our youthful chaps. Anyhow, we disembarked, and again, alongside there was another ship disembarking troops, and they were Royal Flying Corps. I don't know whether a wing of the squadron. Anyway, the Royal Flying Corps. And it's just a slight coincidence, strange, that disembarking in France on the 14th of August, 1914, alongside the Royal Flying Corps, I landed in France on the Normandy beaches in the summer of 1944, with TAF, Tactical Air Force, on the same ship, and on the same down the same ramp on the and into France. But that's going forward a number of years.
What did you know about the RFC at this stage? It must have been fairly new to you.
It was fairly the only thing you know about the RFC. I remember that once on manoeuvres in Aldershot, or it might have been a route march, I passed a stele to the memory of Colonel Cody, and I thought Colonel Cody was the Buffalo Bill. That was his name. But this was a Colonel Cody who was one of the early flyers and was killed there in a flying accident. Had you heard about that? I remember that in Aldershot. And I remember them being changed, their uniform was changed, and they were given those kind of caps, hats that they have, and this over tunic, which they resented very much. I think I have a vague, vague recollection of them comparing it to convicts, because convicts were dressed very much like that with those peaked hats. And they didn't like it, and then they got used to it. Same as I considered the battle dress when it was first introduced, like a baby suit. I didn't like it. I liked the old one. But you get used to it.
What happened then when you actually landed at Boulogne?
Well, we waited whilst all the various equipment on the seaside, and I and another chap, we strolled over to a cafe. And this is just a personal incident. We strolled over to a cafe and didn't know what to order. So we asked for a coffee, and they served it us in a glass. We'd never had tea or coffee in a glass. And they said something, and we said, wee wee, and they poured rum into it, and so I had a coffee and rum, and it was a first drink I'd ever had in France, first time I'd had a coffee and rum, and it was really nice. Anyhow, we dashed back to the quayside, and formed up, and we'd to march.